Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6. Chapter 2. And then this morning we have text number 38, right? What did you put on the board? Yeah.
38.
Yeah, Maham. Okay. So you can see when we do the, when I say the words, you see where it says? You look at the, okay. You look at the piece of paper you have here. You see when, you see where it has here, Mamaham, in the text?
Yeah.
Then you look down in the word for word, Prabhupada's blitz it up, Mamaham. So when I do the thing, I use this part, okay. Mama, aham, iti, deha, adau, hitva, amitya, 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 artha, dhi, matim, dasye, manaha,
Bhagavati,
Shuddham,
Tat,
Kirtana,
Adibihi.
And I'll go back to the text. Mamaham iti dehadau.
Mamaham iti dehadau.
Hidva mityartha dhirmatim.
Hidva mityartha dhirmatim.
Dasye mano bhagavati.
Dasye mano bhagavati.
Shuddham tat kirtanadivihi.
Shuddham tat kirtanadivihi.
Mamaham iti dehadau.
Mamaham iti dehadau.
Itva mithyartha dhirmatim.
Itva mithyartha dhirmatim.
Dashe mano bhagavati.
Dashe mano bhagavati.
Shuddham tat kirtanadibihi.
Shuddham tat kirtanadibihi.
Mamaham iti dehadau.
Mamaham iti dehadau.
Vamiti artha dhirmatim.
Vamiti artha dhirmatim.
Dasye mano bhagavati.
Dasye mano bhagavati.
Shuddham tat kirtanadibihi.
Shuddham tat kirtanadibihi. Mamaham iti dehadau.
Mamaham iti dehadau.
Hitva mityartha dhirmatim.
Hitva mityartha dhirmatim.
Dasye mano bhagavati.
Dasye mano bhagavati.
Shuddham tat kirtanadibihi.
Shuddham tat kirtanadibihi. Mama,
mama,
my,
my,
aham,
aham,
I,
iti,
thus,
that,
deha adau, in the body and things related to the body,
in the body and things related to the body,
hitva,
giving up, amitya,
not false,
artha.
On values. He,
with my consciousness.
Motim.
The attitude.
Dasye.
I shall engage.
Manaha.
My mind.
Bhagavati.
Bhagavati.
On the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Shuddham.
Shuddham.
Pure.
Pure.
Tat.
Tat.
His name.
His name.
Kirtana, Kirtana Adibihi.
Kirtana Adibihi.
By chanting, hearing, and so on.
By chanting, hearing, and so on.
Translation. Simply because I chanted the holy name of the Lord in the association of devotees, my heart is now becoming purified. Therefore, I shall not fall victim again to the false lures of material sense gratification. Now that I have become fixed in the absolute truth, henceforward I shall not identify myself with the body. I shall give up false conceptions of I and mine, and fix my mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada's purport. How a living entity becomes a victim of the material condition is lucidly explained in this verse. The beginning is to misidentify the body as oneself. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita begins with a spiritual instruction that one is not the body, but is within the body. This consciousness can be possible only if one chants the holy name of Krishna, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and always keeping oneself in the association of devotees. This is the secret of success. Therefore, we stress that one should chant the holy name of the Lord and keep oneself free from the contamination of this material world, especially the contaminations of lusty desires for illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. With determination, one should vow to follow these principles and thus be saved from the miserable condition of material existence. The first necessity is to become free from the bodily concept of life. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Simati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Jivani. Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesa Sunyavari Paschachare Sitarani. Om Mangyanam Timurandas Yaganandjana Shalakaya Saksuru Militam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Pancha Kalpa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitana Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, okay, here is Ajamil's resolution, his determination. So you notice it really has two parts. First, he says his mentality shall be that his consciousness, his deed with my his consciousness, shall be on real things, amitya artha, on values or purposes that are amitya, not false but true. And hitva, giving up deha, the body, adishu, and all the things related to the body, all that's with the idea of mamaham. Mamaham iti. This word iti in Sanskrit is like put what's in front of it in quotation marks. So saying or thinking mamaham, that is to say, so this phrase mamaham shows up in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam as the indicator of false existence. the consciousness, the aham, I am the body. I, the false I. We say ahankara, false ego. That is to say, we are mistaken about who we are. And then so this mom, aham, I am the body. Or also the other, I am the enjoyer. Mama, whatever is in relationship to the body, this is mine. My house, my wife, my children, my money, my reputation, all this mama. And this, so this is the condition of material embodiment. So Prabhupada says, how a living entity becomes a victim of the material condition is lucidly, clearly explained in this verse. So mamaham, becoming entangled with this. The focus of the attention is on mithyartha, false things. The absorption of the mind, the consciousness, or your mental, your, what are you paying attention to? What are you concerned with? What are you absorbed in? So it should be in real things and not in false things. Somehow or other, we have to be absorbed in something. So giving up this, hitva, hitva means throwing away, hitva, giving up this, rather, I shall engage dashe, my manaha, my mind, bhagavati, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, shuddham, in a pure way, who is pure, tat kirtan adivihi, by kirtan, and adivihi also means like the same word, adal, etc. Kirtan, and the rest. Rest means shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, padasevanam, arjanam, vandanam, dasham, sakyam, atmagivetam, all the activities of devotional service. This is how I shall. So one is I give up this, and I take up this. My attention goes from material to spiritual. That's his determination. You have to give up the one thing by absorbing oneself in the other thing. We cannot do both successfully at the same time. So here the beginning is, as he says, to misidentify the body as oneself. Prabhupada has told us that when we go and present Krishna consciousness to people, new people, we should always make a point to tell them they're not the body. This is the almost entry-level spiritual life. Even if you're a Mayavadi, the Vaishnavas, the Mayavadis, we all agree on this point. Everybody, the yogis, whatever, anyone who's a transcendentalist in the Vedic tradition, on this everyone agrees. Aham Brahmasmi, it says in the Upanishads, I am Brahman. And if also, if you take university courses in Hinduism, you'll learn Aham Brahmasmi. Aham, I, Asmi am Brahman. I am Brahman. Still, even myself, after taking a number of these courses, graduate school, I knew Aham Brahmasmi. I still didn't quite, I didn't know what it really meant. And it wasn't until I encountered devotees in Prabhupada's literature that it became clear, because aham brahmasmi, well, the meaning is I am Brahman. Now, if you're a Mayavadi, you take it to mean also I am God. That's another false aham. But the basic meaning is I am spirit. So then if I am spirit, then it means I'm not matter. That's the corollary. If I am spirit, I'm not matter. Now, I didn't understand that implication until Prabhupada clearly explained this like this, that I am not matter, which means, therefore, the next clear part, I am not the body, or I am not this body. Then it, whoa, that's a shock. So that was the part that really people don't really understand. But Prabhupada, we had the slogan, I am not this body. Every ISKCON devotee learns this. In fact, there's one academic, a professor in England, who was studying Krishna consciousness movement, and she wrote a book, not a very good book, but the title is I Am Not My Body, because she thought this was such a striking idea. But it's there in Aham Brahmasmi. By simple logic, you can just extract it from I am spirit, therefore I'm not matter, therefore I'm not this body. Now the other thing is to understand what the body is. The body, it means what is made of matter. And our body is that part of material nature to which we are most closely connected. But the body has two aspects. One is what's called the stula sharira, the gross body, that we can, made of earth, water, fire, air, so on, the one we see. But then there's a second part to it, manas, buddhi, ahankara, the subtle body, or what we would say generally, my mind, although this is more subtle distinction between manas, buddhi, ahankara. But it means also, therefore, I'm not my mind. This is important to explain to people in the West, because when there's been talk about the soul in the West, it's always been identified with the mind. And there's reasons for that, because we're more closely related to our mind than we are to our gross body. See, because we identify more closely with the mind. Because it doesn't change in the same way that the gross body changes. If I have some disorder in my gross body, something is happening. Say I lose a limb by accident or war, somehow I lose an arm or a leg. I still think I'm me. I'm handicapped in some way. But I still retain my identity. But if some accident happens to my mind, some mental disturbance, then I really think this is happening to me. Because we just identify so closely with the mind. So sometimes in imagination we can travel away from our body. When we go to sleep, you know, our mind is still active and dreaming and the body is there. But it's harder for people to understand, I'm not my mind. And the other thing is that at the time of death, we're automatically liberated from the gross body. We leave it behind. But the soul takes the subtle body with it. And then because it has the subtle body, again, a gross body. So the subtle body is more longer related, connected with the soul. And in fact, when you give up the gross body, you don't give up the subtle body unless you're a liberated soul. Then you give up the subtle body. It's very hard to become free from the subtle body. And because one doesn't, And again, it goes body is there. So we identify more with the subtle body. So if you read Western literature on what they call the mind-body problem, there's a whole library of books on this over the ages discussing this idea of the and they're almost always identify the words soul with also the mind. And now philosophers say that was a mistake. They just don't want to say there's a soul because it's clear enough that the way the subtle and gross body are related to each other, they're part of the same unit. The body is a psychophysical unit. But in Europe thinking, because they're trying to say the soul is different from the body, then they try to think of the mind as somehow not attached. And that's so obviously false. They're part of the same causal system. When I become angry, which is a mental state, my blood pressure goes up, my face turns red, so on. So all my different emotions and feelings and so on in the mind, you know, they influence the body. And similarly, if I do things in the body, it'll influence the mind. I drink alcohol, my mind becomes bewildered. Drugs and so on. So they're linked together. And unfortunately, people don't know how to study this link. That's one of the defects of medical science. They can't figure out because of it's subtle. Subtle means it's hard to see, hard to measure, hard to. So medical science then just tries to deal with the brain, which is a part of the gross body. And maybe it's somewhere in the brain, the interface is there between the gross body and the subtle body, but they don't understand the subtle body. Because nobody can figure out how the gross and subtle body come together in the same system. Because what happens in the subtle body is private to me. I can say the sentence, I see red, but the actual color red as it appears to my consciousness is quite private. I don't really know if any systematic way what I see as red, you see as the same. There's no way to compare it. If we just are consistent in using it, we'll never know. We have the same subjective experience. So that our mental events are pretty private unless we can talk or indicate to people what's going on. They don't know. They don't know. So we identify more closely this way. So I'm not the body, I'm not the gross body, I'm not the subtle body. And then people, you tell people that, then what am I? And we say, well, you're jivatma, you're spirit and soul. But what's that? After you eliminate the body and you eliminate the mind, what's left? And the answer is consciousness. That we know that it says in the Bhagavad Gita that the symptom of the presence of soul is consciousness. And so this is also important to point out to people, because people don't know, in literature, people go to churches, places, they talk about the soul, and they have no idea what it is. One thing is that they think I am a body and I have a soul. It's like some ghostly part of myself. And so when they say, what about your soul? What about your immortal soul? You're going to die, but your soul is going to live. I think, why should I care? I'm going to die. The idea that I am the soul, as the Sanskrit words, atma, makes you understand this, that they don't understand. I am not the body. I am the soul. I don't have a soul. I am the soul. But I am the soul and I have a body. It's not the other way around. I'm not that I am a body. For people, they just identify so much with the material body. One early experience I had was on the streets of Philadelphia trying to explain this to somebody, that you're not the body. And he got really angry. He said, how can you say that? He said, your philosophy is so contradictory. You're trying to tell me I'm not me. You're trying to say, I'm not me. Because he just was so identified with the body that to say you're not the body, you just couldn't have any relationship with it whatsoever. So he had to point out to people that even though that I'm not the gross body, I'm not the subtle body, still soul is present by virtue of consciousness. So then, what do we mean by consciousness? And there's another place where there's a library of books, Journal of Consciousness Studies, and all these people are trying to figure it out. Because consciousness is really, really mysterious. Again, they want to say that somehow consciousness arises from matter. But there's a real problem with this. Because they tell this story that everything in the world is simply material structures. They're structures of matter. And that means that really that you can measure them and you can express them somehow in terms of numbers. And in the story, they say, is that in the beginning, there were simply very, very simple structures of matter. But that as time progressed, for some reason, again, nobody explains why or how, these structures become more complicated and more complex. Now, normally we see that if there's any structure of matter and time passes, it becomes less complex. It falls apart. It decays. This is the effect of time. But somehow or other, there's a reverse effect going on. The tendency of matter to fall apart is called entropy. And there's this, the second law of thermodynamics, which expresses this entropy. But the general history of the cosmos, according to their theology, is that they're simple things, and in close to time they become more complex. So this, the whole thing is an exception. So therefore they have to speculate that, well, our particular universe is an anti-entropic branch system. Like everywhere else and other universes, entropy is an effect, but somehow there's this little exception, which is us. Because the idea that over time things become more and more complicated for no reason whatsoever, right? There can't be a God, there can't be anybody organizing it according to them. So mysteriously, the simple matter becomes, in the course of time, more and more complex. So that means you just simply have more complicated, intricate structures of matter, which again, you can express fully in terms of numbers. Matter means, according to their understanding, you can, how long is it, how high is it, how wide is it, how heavy is it, how fast is it, how slow is it, all these things, all you can measure and write numbers down. That's what science is, it's about numbers. So, but then the story goes on that as matter reaches a certain level of complexity, something else appears. which is not just another structure of matter, but the experience of structures of matter. Now, how does that happen? Because if you just have a universe made up of structures of matter, it gets more complicated. That's all you should ever have. But this idea, the experience of structures of matter, is not another structure of matter. It's something else. It's a whole new kind of thing. And that's what we mean by consciousness. Just the ability to undergo experiences. This book does not undergo experiences. This drum does not undergo experiences. It's completely a structure of matter. This drum is a material object that takes up space in the room. This body is a material object that takes up space in the room. What's the difference? Here there's somebody at home. Yeah. Here I'm having experiences. Another way to say it is I have significance for myself. This drum only has significance for others. This drum is entirely an object. But I'm not just an object, I'm a subject. That is I. But that's what we mean by consciousness. It doesn't necessarily mean human self-consciousness. Even the plants, we don't have consciousness. It's dimmer than ours. In other words, it picks up fewer things, supposedly. The plants, the animals, the trees, they all undergo experiences. And we understand that that means, what is undergoing the experiences? It is the soul is present. It's consciousness is a symptom of the presence of soul. This consciousness, as you see, it's just almost ontologically, that's a philosophically impossible that it comes from matter. It's a different kind of a thing. And that's why Krishna says in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that they're two separate energies. He explains to Arjuna that first of all there's my apara prakriti, my inferior nature. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. He calls it bina prakriti, separated. Somehow or other it's a little detached from him. His separated material, his separated nature, which is inferior. And then there's another energy, the jivas. This is another one. So there's this lower and this other energy, the jivas, and then they come together. And when they come together, everything that's manifest in the material world happens. Without the jivas, not much would go on. When the jivas are put into the field, then the bodies develop with relationship to the jivas and the world goes on. So the world arises from these two energies that come together. It's not that there's only matter, and, you know, the jivas come out of matter. Prabhupada compared this to the theory that scorpions are born out of rice. There's rice there, and sometimes you see scorpions come out, and people think, oh, the rice have become scorpions, but actually the scorpion has laid the eggs in the rice. So that's where they come from. So these are the two things. So people have to understand this basic philosophy. I am not my body, I am spirit soul. So it's very interesting, like the first thing the Vedas tell us is that we don't know who we are. Our consciousness is covered. This is the meaning of Maya. That we are the most basic thing, we do not know who we are. So then the process But the thing is that the soul is further described as Satchitananda. The soul is not a separated like the material energy. The soul is actually spiritual, like the Supreme Soul, and therefore has the other characteristics of spirit, Satchitananda. Chit means a consciousness that's manifest. Of course, it's not really fully manifest here in the material world. It becomes more clear as one goes from the mode of ignorance to passion and goodness. So we are only partially consciousness, but that's the chit that comes from the soul. And the other things, sat, well, we exist in this body, but we identify with the body. So its existence is limited. You know, I'm born, here I die. That's, as long as I identify with the body, I think this is what happens to me. And my consciousness is contaminated, so that's how I identify with the body. And then Ananda. What pleasure I feel is flickering, temporary. All this pain happens. So my spiritual nature right now is not manifest to me. I experience myself as asat, achit, and nirananda. Asat, temporary, achit, ignorant, and nirananda, not blissful, suffering, the opposite of that. So all this is because of identifying the self with the material body. So Prabhupada has given various arguments to people that we're not the body. He had a simple one. He did the school children once, you know. He said, take your finger, point to your knee. They all pointed their knee. Point to your head, they point their head. Point to your arm, they point their arm. Point to your chest, they point to the chest. Then point to yourself. And, oh. It said, see, you're not your body. So different ways that you can try to argue this thing. There's a kind of a pointing thing that's a little more sophisticated. This English philosopher, 18th century English philosopher, David Hume, famous empiricist philosopher in Western philosophy, who denied that there was a self. He said that when I introspect, when I look into myself, I do not see any single continuous thing that I can call a self. All I see in my mind are various bundles of memories, of feelings, of impressions of things in the outside world, ideas, all kind of bundled together, but I do not see any single enduring self. The famous passage in Western philosophy. But then a devotee has to ask to David Hume, who's looking? It's like going around in a warehouse with a flashlight where there's this, that, and the other thing. But he doesn't see himself with the point of the flashlight. So actually consciousness, he missed this consciousness itself is there. And that consciousness is the real symptom. So, but the reason we have to know that I'm not the body is really, it's like a theoretical statement. It's jnana, it's book knowledge. But the only use of jnana or book knowledge is when it's relevant to action. And so it really has to be a guide to action. Because I have to think, if I'm not the body, why don't I realize it? And then you can see begin to see the way, the path of realization. If you think you are your body, self-realization or transcendence, it's just not even possible. But if I'm a spirit soul, if this mysterious consciousness thing, as it is said, then because I'm eternal, a particle, then how do I release this particle? I'm this particle. How do I free the soul from this bondage and come into my own nature? So that's the other thing, is that why does one identify with the body? And here, it's because absorption in sense gratification. This is why I can say I'm a Hare Krishna, and I believe I'm not my body. But it's just a theoretical idea. But what needs to be realized knowledge, it doesn't do me any good unless I can experience myself as a spirit soul. I can actually change my, reawaken my original identity. And it simply doesn't come by reading books or even convincing myself and getting firmly convinced about this philosophy by so many arguments. Because the identification of the self with the material body takes place because of sense gratification. When I enjoy sense gratification, anytime I engage in an act of sense gratification, that increases the identification of myself with my body and my mind. This is what happens. And you cannot enjoy sense gratification without increasing the false ego. This is why Krishna says in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yehi samsparasuja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. Those bhoga pleasures, samsparasuja, that arise from the contact between the senses and the objects, samsparsha. You bring the senses together with their appropriate objects, and some pleasure is there. You enjoy that pleasure. Samsparasuja bhoga. And we think this is happiness. This is the way to full satisfaction. But Krishna then says, dukkha yonaya evate. He destroys that, because actually he says they are the birthplace of dukkha, suffering. Although we are trying to enjoy it, the cause is suffering. So it's really interesting that he's saying that the world is just the opposite from which almost everyone thinks. Sense gratification causes suffering. Why does it do that? Because it increases the identification of the self with the material body. And that's very bad, because we know the future of the body. It will be taken apart by material nature. It will grow old. It will become diseased. That's going to happen. The more we add, and not only that, but in the world, so many bad things happen. There's bad relationships of suffering, of different relationships. There's the threefold miseries, those that are caused by other human beings, those that are caused by your own body and mind, those that are caused by the demigods, global warming, maybe we did it, hurricanes, and, big natural disasters. So all these things are happening to the body. And if I identify with the body, the more I identify with the body, the more I experience these things as happening to me. They're not. Prabhupada has explained that compared our situation to a person who's dreaming. In the dream, he creates a dream body which he identifies with, and then his dream turns into a nightmare. And he's being chased through the jungle by a tiger and captured by it. And he's in terror. And then he screams and he wakes up and he's safe in bed. He was always safe. This was not happening to him. It's just happening to the dream body that he identified with. So in the same way, none of this really is happening to us. It's just happening to this body. We're associated with the body because of this false ego, and we identify with it. That's the reason why we suffer. And there's nothing you can do to so improve the body and so control material nature as to stop this. This is what the demons want to do. The demons want to, just by dealing with the body, they want to live forever in this body. And they think by technology and material advancement and by herbs and drugs and whatever, they can fix the body so this doesn't happen, and they can eventually control material nature. Ever since I was a kid, I used to read in the newspaper that pretty soon, you know, in the future, we'll discover the secret of stop old age and we'll stop death and all these things. People are thinking like that. Progress will happen. But it doesn't work that way. It's just not, because as Prabhupada says very wisely, the more one tries to control material nature, the more one becomes entangled and under her control. So that's the way it is. So one has to understand this, that I am not the body. And then the process of sense gratification has to stop. At least sense gratification that depends upon the body. So that was the one part. This is the beginning. And then the other part is, Prabhupada said, consciousness that I'm not the body can be possible only if one chants the holy name of Krishna. Because that Hare Krishna mantra, if chanted properly with some care and attention in the association of devotees while trying to give up all the different kinds of sense gratification, it purifies. The consciousness changes. It destroys the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. And the mode of goodness becomes more prominent, then one can understand things in the right way, can see things in the right way, the identification with the body ceases, and therefore, this is, things are working. By coming into contact with Krishna, who's pure, we become purified. The Prabhupada says this is the secret of success. One chants the holy name of Krishna, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and always keeps oneself in the association of devotees. Therefore, we stress that one should chant the holy name of the Lord and keep oneself free from the contaminations of this material world, especially the contaminations of lusty desires for illicit sex, meat-eating, intoxication, and gambling. Because one has to live in a society where these four things are not the ultimate happiness. Sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling here means not just casinos, but any frivolous, time-wasting activity. Prabhupada includes cinema and sports. You just waste your time, passing your time. Well, we have to live in a different kind of society where these are not the prominent activities and the hope of happiness. And then one can have this actual experience. With determination, we should follow these vows, he says, and then be saved by the material, miserable conditions of material nature. This is very clearly the way out. And so Ajamya has now evinced this determination. I'm giving these things up, this mamaham and so on, and I'm taking up fixing my consciousness, changing my attention, my mind, from thinking about the material world, the body, and all the things in relationship to it, to the chanting, fixing my mind to the Lord through chanting and holding things together. Okay? Questions? Comments? Yeah?
Now that this knowledge is existing, knowledge, this knowledge, transcendental knowledge, which comes from the Indian scriptures, is existing. The difference between the matter and the soul. Mm-hmm. Why the modern science cannot accept it? It's not only because it cannot prove mathematically. It must be more, much more than that.
Yeah, it is, because the mentality is demonic, more or less. I mean, the way science is developed, it's really a project that's rooted in the idea of becoming God, to control material nature, becoming the master of material nature. It's essentially, as it is now, not that all scientists are like that, but the project, as it developed, is essentially an atheistic project. It really begins in the Enlightenment, the European, or the Enlightenment, the Aufklärung, as they called it, where you get, let's get rid of gods, let's get rid of tradition, let's get rid of old things, and just using science and reason, let us control material nature and control human beings and make them over. That's the modern world. This is the modernist project, the Enlightenment project. And that's where modern science is born, and it has this idea. And people will not. People are only gradually going to discover it's not working. They're starting to now. Now they're starting to find out. We're supposed to by now have conquered diseases, and yet there are new diseases and worse diseases. We're supposed to control the climate. I mean, I was told when I was a kid that, you know, it won't be too long before you just say, okay, today you want a partially cloudy day and you'll be able to dial it and they'll fix it. You know, airplanes will go up there and move the clouds around and see them, you know. And now we have global warming. Why do we have global warming? We made it by our science. So this is what's happened. People will have to understand. So this science right now is rooted in a huge false ego project of not being the servant of God, of getting rid of God. So, because science doesn't just exist by itself, it's funded by people, it's done by people, and these people have different desires. Some of them, you know, just want to understand. But others, they are... But the whole thing, this is how it works. Okay. Where?
Well, I think it may be coming mostly from the flower cooler. Like, the flower cooler is like 50 degrees, it should be 40. They came out and did something to it so that you didn't know how. But it's... all the electricity in the building now is flashing off and on, not just in here. So I got flashlights for the greeting and the deities, but I don't think you're going to be able to be sure to do this.
This just started. It wasn't doing anything
before. Yeah, no, just 5 minutes ago. I just was born.
Yeah, you better stop. Shoot a frog pot.
It's not going to happen. But we're looking at that.
You better call the electricians, huh?
Yeah, I'm not sure.